A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Words appear. The following film contains graphic descriptions of sexual abuse involving minors, which may be disturbing for some viewers. A trainer wraps the ankle of a young woman. Words appear. A Netflix original documentary. The trainer tosses a roll of tape aside. In association with Impact Partners, in association with Artemis Rising Foundation. In a large gym, a banner reads, Oklahoma.
Tight knees, tight knees.
A group of young women warm up on a blue gymnastics floor.
When I was young, like, my dream was always to go to the Olympics. And so I always had that in the back of my head.
Guys, the goal is no arm circles on any of your sticks. Only
in association with Meadow Fund and Dobkin Family Foundation.
I just love gymnastics. I love the drive that it gives me.
In association with Chicago Media Project and Grant Me the Wisdom Productions.
It teaches you to be strong, independent.
An actual film's production. The gymnast with the taped ankle jumps side to side on and off of mats stacked at the height of her shins.
Being able to fly through the air and do the things that we do, it's just so thrilling and get that adrenaline rush, and you can't even explain it.
A film by Bonnie Cohen and John Schenck. The gymnast practices on the uneven bars. In a home video, a little girl sprints down a runway and vaults onto a large, soft mat. Maggie Nichols, gymnast.
Well, I started gymnastics when I was like 3 years old because I was always climbing out of my crib, you know, climbing on all the furniture and everything. So my parents put me in it just be in a safer environment where there's like mats and coaches and stuff like that.
Gina Nichols.
I liked the sport. I mean, I did it in high school. I always watched it on TV and I loved it. And so I had this little girl after three sons, and I put her in it. So, yes, as a preschooler. Right away, the coaches picked up on her. They nabbed her up as a little girl, like in second grade. I mean, she was the only 10-year-old in the country that competed at nationals.
John Nichols.
You know, somebody drove her to the gym, you know, maybe 45 minutes from here. Come back, maybe go back to work, pick up Maggie at the gym. That was every day for years and years and years.
Maggie competes.
This is Maggie Nichols, level 10 junior from Boise, Texas.
The goal was to try to be an elite gymnast and to make the national team. Did online school as well just so I could train more in the gym.
And this is probably one of my favorite Leos. I love the white. Like, I don't know what it is, but like, if it has white on it, I just love it. I don't know why.
A photo shows young gymnasts gathered around their coach.
If you wanted to take the next step to make national team, you need to be very strong because gymnastics would be like, you know, like almost your whole life. I mean, it was almost my whole life. I mean, you give up almost everything.
2014 PNG Gymnastics Championships. Maggie steps up to a balance beam.
When I asked you guys who impressed you in terms of who's coming up after Simone Biles, you said Maggie Nichols was one.
You know, but talking to her earlier this week, she said she finally feels like she's in the mix.
Maggie begins her beam routine. She does a graceful forward flip without using her hands. In the Oklahoma gym, Maggie's taped feet land on the beam. Wearing an OU leotard, she performs a split jump.
USA Gymnastics took Maggie's Olympic dream away from her.
Gina Nichols, Maggie's mom.
It was just so hurtful and so painful, everything that happened.
John Nichols, Maggie's dad.
We have fairly good ideas on what actually happened. Evidence, I would say.
So you're watching justice happen slow motion, it sounds like.
Well, hopefully justice. Hopefully justice.
He gives a tight-lipped smile. A group of words in newsprint fade away, leaving a title, Athlete A. A thin line moves left to right, underlining it. The sun peaks over the horizon beyond a cityscape. Words appear, Indianapolis 2019. A vertical sign on a building reads, IndyStar.
When we started reporting on the initial story, this was really the most explosive story that the USA Today network has had in several years. Yet it was coming out of the sticks, you know. It was coming out of a small little newsroom.
Reporters meet in a conference room. Okay, Steve Berta, investigations editor, the Indianapolis Star.
one of our sources who runs the popular blog.
Like everyone, I watched gymnastics during the Olympics, and I had witnessed some of the stars, you know, over the years. USA Gymnastics was an organization in this town, but I really didn't know a lot about what was going on behind the scenes. So, you know, what that culture was like was new to me, and we sort of were plunged into it.
3 years earlier, August 2016, a flag bearing the Olympic rings reads Rio 2016.
Every 4 years, it's our time to shine. Our moment when the toughest sport in the world takes its rightful place on the world's biggest stage.
The U.S. women's gymnastics team enters.
When the brightest spotlight shines on the best athletes these United States have to offer. Every 4 years starts right now.
It is one of the most in-demand events at the Olympics, and it could be historic. In 1996, there was a Magnificent Seven. In 2012, a fierce five. This group will make a name for themselves tonight, one way or the other.
Ali Raisman finishes a tumbling pass in Indianapolis.
As the Summer Olympics gets underway in Rio, an Indy Star USA Today Network investigation unveils a possible sexual abuse scandal at USA Gymnastics and alleges the organization has a policy that may have harmed child athletes.
Marissa Kwiatkowski.
I had been working on an investigation into failures to report sexual abuse in schools. We'd had a number of local cases in Indiana. And so as I was looking at a broader piece on why does this seem to keep happening? Why do people not report as they're required to do? A source suggested that I look at USA Gymnastics and how they handle sexual abuse allegations. And that source pointed me toward a lawsuit involving a predatory coach who had moved from gym to gym to gym despite warning signs about his conduct.
Mark Alessia, investigative reporter.
One coach was shown to have abused a young gymnast after USA Gymnastics had been warned about him years earlier. In the file, one complaint said, this coach needs to be put in a cage before he rapes somebody. USA Gymnastics did nothing.
As we were pursuing this investigation, we got access to these depositions with current and former high-ranking USA Gymnastics officials that describe their policy for how they handle these allegations.
Deposition of Stephen Penny Jr.
And you are the president currently of USA Gymnastics?
Yes.
If you receive a complaint of sexual misconduct, whether it be by a professional member or anyone that has a membership with USAG, do you turn it over to local authorities?
No. We don't turn over a complaint.
Words type out on a computer screen. He inherited an executive policy of dismissing complaints as hearsay unless they were signed by a victim or a victim's parent.
For the first time, it showed that USA Gymnastics had a policy of not reporting all allegations to authorities, that they would dismiss allegations as hearsay unless they were signed by a victim, a victim's parent, or an eyewitness to the abuse.
Newspapers speed along a printing press.
And we found USA Gymnastics had sexual abuse complaint files on 54 coaches. And if there was no signed statement by the victim or the victim's parent, they just tucked it in a folder and stuffed it in Steve Penny's filing cabinet. And then those coaches went on to molest other children.
A headline reads, A Blind Eye to Sex Abuse. How USA Gymnastics protected coaches over kids by failing to report allegations. In Rio, Simone Biles finishes a tumbling pass and completes her floor routine with a quick series of smooth bounces off the padded floor. She ends in a pose, smiling.
Get the gold medals ready again.
That is an Olympic gold medal winning moment.
As Simone runs off the floor, her teammates surround her in a group hug. Ali Raisman kisses her forehead. In Indianapolis, a worker wheels a large cart stacked with hundreds of newspapers. At night, a truck travels down a road. In a neighborhood, a woman delivers papers from behind the wheel of her pickup.
As athletes are gathering in Rio, a stunning report from the Indianapolis Star and USA Today Network dominated this day.
The paper is reporting that on multiple occasions, USA Gymnastics compiled complaints of coaches accused of sexual misconduct, but refused to share the information with police, most often dismissing it as hearsay because the complaints were not made by the victims, those young athletes, or their parents. The question this morning,
Steve Penny, the president of USA Gymnastics, said the organization is, quote, committed to promoting a safe environment, and noted, quote, we feel the Star left out significant facts that would have painted a more accurate picture.
Rachel Den Hollander, former gymnast.
I was cleaning my kitchen, and I had two babies that were 13 months apart, and they were both fussy. And so I had my baby strapped to me. I was wearing her while I cleaned the kitchen, and I needed to make a shopping list. So I opened my computer, and Facebook was up and trending in the news section. Was the headline for the Indy Star article. It's a complete accident that I even saw it. But I clicked on it and I read it right away. And the first thought was, I was right. They've been burying sexual abuse. I was right. And this is it. Now's the time. If it's ever going to come out, it's going to come out now.
At the Indianapolis Star, writers work in the newsroom. Mark Alessia.
On the morning of publication of that first story, we got an email from Rachel Den Hollander, and she wrote, my abuse wasn't by a coach, but it was by a famous doctor, and if they're covering things up for the coaches, I think they would be covering it up for him. And that was the first time I had heard there could be something wrong with Larry Nassar.
August 2016, voicemail to Mark Alessia.
Hi, Mr. Alessia. My name is Jessica Howard. I just wanted to call you as a follow-up to your story. I am very nervous about talking to you about it, but I think it would help bring justice to a lot of the people who have been affected by USA Gymnastics and their policies. Thank you. Bye.
Jessica Howard, Rhythmic Gymnastics
when
Champion.
The story came out in 2016. Nassar just came back into my head. When something hits you like that realization that it was sexual abuse and you haven't known, haven't thought about it, it becomes so real, like it was yesterday. Like it just happened to you, like you are 15.
Jamie Dancher, USA Olympic Team 2000.
My head started kind of like spinning a little bit. I've never told anybody, but I was like, wait a minute. This doctor used to do very similar things to me. At that point, I was still scared, but I was thinking, if he is a pedophile and I don't do something about it, I can't live with that.
John Manley, attorney.
Well, I was approached by Jamie Dancher, who was a 2000 Olympian, and she told me the story about this Dr. Nassar, and she felt like he had sexually assaulted her. I believed her. After I agreed to take her case, I called the Indianapolis Star, and I said, great article. By the way, have you ever heard of a guy named Larry Nassar?
Mark Alessia.
I was stunned. I mean, I just thought, now we're talking three people. And these women didn't know each other. How many more could there be?
In the Indianapolis Star newsroom, Marissa Kwiatkowski types a search for Lawrence Nassar. At a championship, a gymnast does a complicated vault and lands badly on her leg.
Oh, golly.
Oh, dear.
She clutches her knee.
Oh, no.
A coach calls for medical as crowd members watch with grim expressions.
You can obviously see the shaking of the head, the resignation. Everybody knows this goes with the territory, and they hate it.
Medical staff, Dr. Larry Nassar, on the floor. He keeps these women together.
The bespectacled Larry Nassar inspects her leg. Now he elevates her leg as she sits in a wheelchair.
Larry Nassar had been the team doctor for USA Gymnastics women's program for 29 years. He was also a Michigan State University doctor at the time. So he was this prominent member of the community when we got these allegations about him.
In a video.
Hello and welcome to gymnasticdoctor.com. This is part of the sports medicine tender teaching moments. I call these TTMs.
Over and over and over and around and around and around and around and around.
It's amazing the number of treatments that these kids will get to keep them healthy enough to sustain them at the world championship level, Olympic championship level that they are. We'll treat them before practice, then we treat them after practice, then we treat them before the second practice because of the two-a-day, then we're there for the entire second practice, then we treat them to the point that they go to bed. So we usually see them at 7 in the morning and get done at 10 at night.
Tim Evans, investigative reporter, the Indianapolis Star.
In medical school, he worked as a trainer. He rose up as a volunteer, and then when he got on the staff at Michigan State, part of his requirement was to do community work. You know, he started a foundation for autistic children, and he seemed like this larger-than-life, better-than-real person.
The reporters meet.
Okay, let's see what else you guys have discovered down here. We very quickly started putting together a story, and we split up those sources. So Marissa flew out to California and met with John Manley and Jamie Dancher.
Jessica Howard at that time had spoken to us, but was not ready to be included in the story even as a Jane Doe. But her story helped us have confidence because, again, it corroborated everything we had heard from Jamie and we'd heard from Rachel.
Mark Alessia drives.
I happened to get Rachel's tip, and she said it would be fine to do an interview on camera, on the record, with her name, in her home.
August 2016.
Tell me more about why now, why you're willing to be brave enough to talk with me.
I didn't know a lot when I was 15, but one thing I did know was that abuse victims aren't treated well. They are mocked, they are questioned, they are blamed, they are shamed, and that does incredible damage to the healing process. I wish I could have dealt with it 16 years ago. I don't think I could have, but I can now.
In a photo, a younger Rachel Denhollander performs on the balance beam.
I was very much a perfectionist, and that's really what attracted me to the sport of gymnastics, was the perfection that it required. But my family wasn't able to afford gym fees, so I didn't start until I was almost 12, because at that point I could work, and my siblings helped me clean the gym, and my mom worked to pay for my gym fees. But I was 5'4 when I started. Way too tall, long torso, wrong body type. So I only competed at the club level and the low club level at that. So I only competed in Michigan. I did it because I loved it. I was not any good.
In a photo, a little girl poses on a beam.
I told my parents I wanted to do gymnastics when I was 3 years old because I saw it on TV, and I just saw these girls flipping and twisting and flying. And I wanted to be able to do that.
Jamie Dancher.
It was like my first love. I loved everything about it. I was crazy. I look back now and I was chucking triple backs off a mini trampoline into the pit. And I was only 9 years old. I had no idea how talented I was. I was just having a good time.
1997.
This is 15-year-old Jamie Dancher who's making a move tonight after a fine beam routine.
A young Jamie starts a floor routine.
I trained with Beth and Steve Rybacki at Gliders Gymnastics from 11 to 18 years old. I went from training about 18 hours a week to about 30 to 35. At that time, I was like, yes, I get to be in the gym more and train more. Like, I couldn't get enough of it. Anything they said it would take to get to the Olympics, I was going to do.
At a competition, her stern-faced coach gives her a pat as Jamie chalks her hands.
I remember having stone bruises on my heels. I couldn't even, like, walk on the carpet. I mean, I had broken toes I competed on and trained on fractured back. I actually competed on.
Jamie performs a vault and sticks the landing.
Bella's gonna love that one.
But yet, it was like every time I had an injury, I wasn't believed.
A white-haired coach watches intently.
You see Bella Caroli back there? He seems to always be back there.
As far as weight, I remember I had the flu. I was literally throwing up for 5 days straight, and I remember getting weighed, and I lost, I think, like 6 pounds from being sick. And I remember Beth telling me, you know, you lost 6 pounds, now we gotta figure out how to keep it off. And to hear they don't care how you do it had a huge effect on me. I mean, back then I didn't even think of it as abuse.
In her interview, Jamie gazes downward.
It's kind of, it's still psychological for me because I almost still feel bad for even saying the truth. Like, I almost, like, I hate this sentence, but I actually, like, looked forward to treatment. And because Larry was the only nice adult, he's really the only nice adult I could remember being a part of USA Gymnastics staff.
At a competition, Larry puts his arm around a gymnast.
He was really the only nice adult there.
He follows her behind a curtain to a backstage area. They disappear around a corner, fade to black. In the Oklahoma gym, Maggie and a teammate chalk their hands at a basin. Later, Maggie grabs hold of an uneven bar and starts a routine. She spins, releasing and catching the upper bar. Now she balances in a handstand and flips down to the lower bar. Maggie Nichols, gymnast.
So when I was like 13, that's when I qualified for elite gymnastics. And when I was 15, I finally made the national team.
At the 2015 PNG Championships, Maggie finishes her floor routine, raising her arms toward the crowd.
She keeps this up. She has a great shot to make that Olympic team next year.
She's still right in the hunt to come second to Simone.
A graphic shows Maggie in second place.
The national team camp was in Texas, and Marta and Bella Caroli owned it. Marta would walk out of her office and we'd all go like this and go shortest to tallest in the line. We trained about 7 hours a day and they ranked us from top to bottom. We just had so many eyes on us, national staff, our own home coaches, other athletes. So it was pretty intense.
I remember Maggie saying that it was really scary and they were very strict, but it was an honor.
That's where the Olympic athletes come from. You get on that team, and now you have a shot.
Caroli Ranch, Huntsville, Texas. Buildings sit nestled among trees.
The parents were never allowed to go to the ranch.
Gina Nichols.
I could hardly ever talk to her when she was there because they didn't have cell phone reception.
John Nichols.
It was a strict way to make them stronger and better for their sport. And so we had to, you know, trust and believe in their system. You know, you would think they'd be able to keep, you know, people safe, especially when we're not allowed to set foot on the property. But I knew nothing about Nassar, and I never even thought to ask those questions because I didn't even know he was there.
A sign outside a row of adjoined cabins reads, Beijing Motel.
In 2015, Larry was doing treatments for my back. And there's like this room called the back room where we like watch TV and like got massages and stuff. He would just do it right there. And I was just like kind of like confused and like wondering what it was. It didn't seem right because I grew up always going to like physical therapy and stuff because I had many injuries growing up. And I've never experienced anything like that. So I thought I'd ask Allie just because, I mean, we were really close friends, and also she was older, too, and has been to national team camps and has worked with him before. So I kind of just asked her, I was like, does he do this to you? Like, is this normal? And she said, yeah, like, he does it to me, too.
In a photo, Maggie stands near a blonde woman, Sarah Jancy.
Maggie's coach, Sarah Jancy, called me up And she said, I want to let you know that I overheard from Maggie and another athlete that Larry Nassar was touching her funny. And Maggie told her he was, you know, touching her private parts. He was putting his hands in her vagina and he was fingering her. And I'm like, what? And I said, well, we need to call the authorities. And she said, yeah, I'm going to call Rhonda Fing, who is in charge of the women's program, right away. So she did. And then the next day, Steve Penny called me. I've never spoken to him personally. All he said was, I hear you have a concern. I said, a concern? My daughter was molested. We need to call the authorities. And he said, no, don't worry about that. I will take care of that. USA Gymnastics will take care of calling the police. 3 or 4 weeks later, Steve Penny calls me again and he says, well, now we want you to talk to an investigator. Her name is Fran Sepler. And I thought, well, maybe this is what they do with child sexual abuse cases. I've never been involved with one, so I didn't know.
You know, at competitions following, you know, Maggie's reporting, Steve Penny would always tell me that, don't worry about Maggie. We'll take care of Maggie. Don't worry about Maggie. We got Maggie. And so why would I not believe him? You know, we're talking USA Gymnastics. We're talking US Olympics.
At the Indianapolis Star, the investigative team meets in a conference room. On the phone, Jennifer Say, author, chalked up.
Can you hear us all right?
I can. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we've got you on speaker, so if it's weird, let us know.
Okay.
So, this is Steve Furta. When you were active in gymnastics, were there coaches or other officials like Nassar who the girls were suspicious of or talked about as being abusive?
Yes, absolutely. There were sexual predators everywhere. They were in my gym. The national team coach, Don Peters, was a known sexual abuser. They were everywhere across the country, and we knew who they were. But more broadly, emotional and physical abuse was absolutely the norm, and we were also beaten down by that. And made so obedient that when we knew that there was a sexual abuser in our midst, we would never say anything. We felt utterly powerless.
1986, a young gymnast performs.
Now watch her face after the tumbling pass. She's hurt her ankle. You see that little grimace? It hurts her.
But she must go on here, the title at stake. The courage of Jennifer Say led her on to the title as women's all-around champion of the USA. But the pain was a heavy price.
Jennifer Say, national champion.
I started the sport in the mid-70s, and I would say the standard methodology of coaching in elite gymnastics was cruelty. That was the accepted methodology. You could be as cruel as you needed to be to get what you needed to out of your athlete. So this is not new. We just weren't good at it. We weren't getting great results. We were getting okay results.
Bella and Marta Caroli, national women's team coordinators.
Bella and Marta Caroli, husband and wife, and what a coaching team they are.
And then Bella and Marta Caroli came here, and they validated that approach. If success is winning, you know, medals in the Olympics, then, you know, they proved that that methodology was successful and was the right way to coach.
John Manley.
People know the Carolis, but I'm not sure many of them really know their history.
1976 Olympics.
Chris, this could be the highlight of the compulsory event. She is one of the technically strongest, best gymnasts that I've ever seen. Watch this. Beautiful rhythm, right to a handstand. Oh, look at that amplitude.
A girl finishes her routine.
Faultless. Absolutely faultless. Nadia Comaneci. Now, what are the judges going to say about that? There's the smile. Some cynics say it had to be trained because she so rarely smiles.
They were Nicolae Ceaușescu's chosen coaches for the Romanian national gymnastics team. And they coached Nadia Comaneci to a gold medal in 1976.
In black and white footage, women perform simple routines on a vault and balance beam.
If you look back at teams from the 50s and the 60s, they look like grown women. They are grown women. But that started to change in the late 60s, but really solidified in 1976 when Nadia won the Olympics as a 14-year-old. And there was just this mad rush of little girls that wanted to do gymnastics because we related to her. And what emerged was an aesthetic that was very, very young, childlike. And so it created a really dangerous environment because eating disorders became very prevalent, you know, delaying menstruation and delaying maturation. But I think people really believed that for the more difficult skills to be performed, you had to be tiny. There's also the benefit of the coaches having more control when the girls are younger.
Nadia Comaneci steps off a plane with a bouquet of flowers. At a ceremony, she wears her Olympic medals.
What's important for people to know is that Nicolae Ceaușescu and his regime was arguably the most repressive regime in the Eastern Bloc. And the Karolis were part of that system.
In black and white footage, Nadia Comaneci and other young girls train in a gym.
The Romania started this idea of training gymnasts from a very young age. Like from 6 years old, they are selected from the kindergarten or elementary schools, and we tested them. Flexibility, strength, and no fear.
No fear.
No fear, yes, no fear.
Geza Pozar, Karoli choreographer.
We have to put this in the context of the Cold War. The Soviet Union or Romania, they could not say, okay, we build better products than the American side, but we can have Nadia Comaneci. Nadia was Romania's best product.
In an interview with Nadia, subtitles, why do you smile so little? Because she is always thinking to her routines. Tracy Talavera.
1976, Nadia was definitely the one to be like at that point. And the Russians, the Romanians, the East Germans, all the, what we call the communist bloc, they were the best by far in the sport. And certainly you always want to be like the ones who were winning. But we would be at competitions and they always seemed very scared, the gymnasts did, and you never saw them talk, and they almost looked like robots. All I can say is the athletes did not look happy, ever.
The Romanian girls practice.
From the very beginning, Bela had this idea that we have a total control over the girls, absolute control.
Bela was controlling. Subtitles. Bela was controlling their weight. They had to step every single day on a scale. He was yelling at them and putting them down.
Fat cow, you are a pig. He, slapped the girls, and the girls were very, very scared.
Marta had this habit of grabbing their neck and get her fingers into their necks.
Plus, slap them, a lot, and the girls had the prints of the rings on their faces sometimes.
Did you report it to the authorities?
Yes, sure. I reported them. But also, you have to understand that nobody took any kind of measures, to stop them. In Romania, that was acceptable.
When he heads for his ranch on a rural highway north of Houston, in his four-wheel drive, with Merle Haggard on the dashboard cassette deck and a day's collection of bugs on the windshield, well, you'd swear you were riding with a born Texan.
Bela drives down a dirt road.
When Bela Karolyi defected to the West, he defected to the West.
A newspaper headline reads, three Romanians defect.
When we defected together, we knew that the United States has lots of talent. We saw the talent in the international competitions. And we know that it's a very, very fertile soil for athletes in the United States.
1984 Olympics, Los Angeles.
I declare open the Olympic Games of Los Angeles.
In a stadium, Mary Lou Retton stands with other gymnasts. Bella leans over a barrier to talk with her.
Mary Lou. Never better, okay? The best what you can want, all right?
A Romanian gymnast paces, Tracy Talavera.
With Bella and Marta coming over here, we copy, cut, paste their style, and now we're doing it in the U.S. We knew what their system was, but we also knew they won all the time.
At the Olympics, Mary Lou Retton sprints down the runway toward the vault in slow motion. She bounces off the springboard, flips over the vault, and sticks her landing. She runs to Bella, who embraces her.
America loves a winner, and when a perky little bundle of energy from West Virginia named Mary Lou Retton took home the gold medal in gymnastics at the 84 Olympics, she became the national sweetheart.
Mike Jackie.
I was the president of USA Gymnastics in 84, and one of my goals was I wanted our property on all the networks. That was the most valuable thing we could do to build our brand, to build the image of our sport. And then all of a sudden, gymnastics was earning almost $12 million a year in revenue in 1991.
USA Gymnastics had a wholesome image, and they had companies who wanted to be attached to that image, and that image was vital to protect.
In a gym, Marta oversees the gymnasts warming up.
What makes this sport so special are the athletes. I've never seen athletes that train as hard as these guys do, and that are as intelligent and personable. I mean, it's just the complete package.
Steve Penny was hired as vice president of marketing when they started out. He worked with television marketing, then he worked with USA Cycling. And by the end of the 90s, the focus of USA Gymnastics just became raising money, attracting sponsorships, and making the best out of their Olympic athletes.
Eventually, Steve Penny became the president of USA Gymnastics. So it had an organization that was run by a sports marketing expert, and that's what he cared about. He cared about marketing this brand.
This is the image of Bella Caroli that the world has grown accustomed to seeing. The intense, relentless coach who now turns out championship gymnasts for the United States.
You know, these children are all being advised by adults as to how they can realize their Olympic dream. So you're basically using that child's dream to build this brand. And they were so busy trying to sell that brand that they didn't have time for those girls.
1996 Olympics.
Right now we turn to women's gymnastics and the United States, which has become a power in recent years, now looking to become the power.
Jennifer Say.
I remember watching the Olympics in my little apartment in 1996, and Carrie Strug was vaulting, and it was viewed sort of as this heroic Olympic achievement, but I saw it differently at the time.
So Carrie Strug, if she can score 9.493, then she will win the team gold for the USA. She's the last to go. She's the only one who can do it.
Carrie Strug does a complicated vault and falls on the landing.
Oh!
She gets up.
This is scary.
She is limping. Here's the reaction of her parents.
And she falls on the first vault, and she's clearly in a lot of pain. She's limping back to the other end of the runway. We learn afterwards that she had been competing on a severe injury.
You can do it! You can do it!
You get two vaults, and the highest score counts, and Team USA needed that second vault.
Right. Bella watches her second vault.
Go.
Carrie sticks her landing on one foot.
And she does it. She lands the vault on one foot.
Carrie Strug is hurt.
And she literally crawls off the mat. She crawls away. And Larry Nassar, at the time nobody knew, but is there.
Larry and others help her walk.
She's being carried off by two of the medical technicians. And we have got to find out if she's... 9.712, she has done it! Carrie Strug has won the gold medal for the United States team. The Russians are in tears.
A Russian gymnast sobs.
They got so close, and the Americans took it away from them.
And Bella swept her up and carried her off.
Carrie waves from his arms.
And everybody's cheering her on as this hero, and all I could think was, why are we celebrating this? Don't pretend she had a choice.
Wave to the people.
She was not going to do anything but go do that vault. We love winners in this country. This is a competitive country. We consider ourselves the best in the world at everything, right? But this notion that we would sacrifice our young to win, I think disgusts us a little. We would never have said that that was the case.
Carrie's teammates help her up to the awards podium. Carrie forces a smile, sniffing back tears.
You know, in other sports, the athletes are adults. They can reasonably make choices about what they want. I don't think that is true in gymnastics. You know, these kids go to these national training centers when they're 10 years old. They are abused and mistreated for years. So even by the time they're of age, the line between tough coaching and child abuse gets blurred. So then when real, like, obvious abuse, sexual abuse happens, you already don't believe your own take on things because you think you're hungry. You think your ankle hurts. You think that you're working really hard. But you're told and you're screamed at that you're lazy and you're fat and there's nothing wrong with your ankle. So when a man puts his ungloved hand into your vagina without asking you, I can only imagine that what you feel is, he's this great doctor and I'm lucky to be here, so I'm not going to say anything.
Caroli Ranch, Huntsville, Texas. 2013 podcast interview with Larry Nassar.
We protect our athletes, not just physically, but mentally. You have to protect your athletes. And you screw up once. If you do something where you break their trust, you're done. Gymnast first. Gymnast first. Gymnast first.
John Manley.
The environment and the culture Bella and Marta Caroli created at the ranch was one of fear, intimidation, and silence. The only bright light at that place was Larry Nassar.
In a video,
bippity-boppity-boo, I like to call it. You just go, you know, bip, bip, bip.
Larry hugs a girl's thigh and jiggles it.
Bippity-boppity-boo there. And pop goes the weasel. So this little
bump. He was kind. He was funny. He made them laugh.
I can articulate it, go boom, chucka, boom, chucka, boom, chuck, chuck. That's what I do when I articulate, okay? And then when I thrust.
He snuck them snacks and gave them food, and he engendered trust in all these women. Nassar was everything the Carolis were not.
Thank you for visiting gymnasticsdoctor.com, where you can see over 400 educational videos on how to rehabilitate your gymnast.
To try and justify the methodology that he used, Larry Nassar produced dozens of videos of him doing these various, what he described as osteopathic procedures to little girls.
It runs through this tunnel from the iliac crest to the pubic symphysis, and there's a ligament.
He has an excellent command of anatomical vocabulary, and it all seems legitimate.
A standard, this is like a standard tape job. This will help for like up the muscles. So to show you, we're going to give her a little bit of a wedgie here. Or a lot of bit of a wedgie, you could say. Okay, when you do this.
But if you tune that out and really watched what he did, the frequency and the ease at which he touched little children was just wildly inappropriate.
Jamie Dancher, USA Olympic Team 2000.
When I met Larry Nassar, I was young.
At the Carolis camp, young Jamie trains.
They were doing testing on everybody. You know, we just want to make sure everyone's healthy on national team. And Larry gave me a physical. And he got me completely naked. And I thought that was normal.
At the ranch, framed photos of Olympic gymnasts cover a wood-paneled wall.
When they went in his office at the ranch, the walls were littered with pictures of Olympians. I treated her, oh yeah. And then he would get a call. And it was Marta Caroli on the line, and he would discuss one of the gymnasts' health while this person was sitting on his table, which, you know, to a little child is very impressive. It's a HIPAA violation, but it's impressive to a child.
A cement and brick sign reads, Michigan State University, Rachel Denhollander, former gymnast.
The first time I went to see Larry, it was at MSU Sports Medicine Clinic in early 2000. I was barely 15 years old. I had a lot of low back pain and a lot of wrist pain, to the point that it got very difficult just to do basic daily chores.
Lay down on the table for me. On your back with your ponytail off the edge.
Larry performs therapy in a video.
He asked to do myofascial release, which I knew was a legitimate physical therapy technique, and he did that with his right hand externally. He did legitimate therapy, and with his left, he sexually assaulted me under the towel. He would position himself in between me and my mom, but since she was so close, I presumed that she was aware of what was going on. I didn't know until months later that she had no idea. She couldn't see where his other hand was because he was intentionally blocking it. There was definitely an escalation. He started anal penetration over time. And then on one of the last appointments, he unhooked my bra and went up my shirt and did a full-on breast massage. He was clearly sexually aroused. It was about an average of once a month, and I saw him for a little over a year, and on the majority of those visits, he abused me.
In a photo, Rachel helps a young gymnast.
It was something that was always present. I couldn't just put it away. Some years later, I went to the head coach at the gymnastics facility where I worked, and I said, Larry sexually abused me under the guise of a medical exam. I told her that no one should be seeing him. When I was told, no one else is saying what you're saying. And cautioned even about speaking out because of the ramifications, that really solidified to me there's nothing I can do. Not right now.
A crowd fills an arena. 2000 U.S. Women's Gymnastics Olympic Team announcement. Amy Chow grins and waves to the crowd.
Jamie Dancer!
Jamie walks along the perimeter of the floor waving to the crowd.
When they announced my name, I was really able to take in that moment to feel like maybe all of this was worth it.
Streamers rain down on the newly announced team.
Bella has selected his team.
Waving, Jamie smiles.
But for me, the Olympics were not a dream come true.
The United States makes its entrance. Look at the smiles. Look at the waving flags, the new uniforms.
In Jamie's interview.
Is Larry a victim of the Olympics?
Yes. Yes, Larry was abusive at the Olympics. When we got there, we had to train morning and night. And all that stress, physically and mentally, to do that every day. My back was always so bad. I mean, I had to get adjustment every day. Sometimes four times a day. Oh, I thought that's what was helping me. And he would sneak us food and candy.
Jamie twists a ring on her finger.
And leave stuff under our pillows.
She glances off. A photo shows her posing during a routine at the Olympics.
I wasn't proud to be an Olympian.
Cut to black. In slow motion, Maggie Nichols, wearing her OU leotard, flies through the air in a backward flip. Behind a stage, a screen reads, Women's Team Final. Gymnasts climb stairs to the stage. October 2015, World Gymnastics Championships. At the competition, Maggie vaults.
So next up, it's Maggie Nichols here. Can she do it? Oh, and she does. It's the Yuchenko 2.5 twist, the Animar.
She she holds hands with her teammates.
Maggie reports the child sexual abuse in, you know, the very beginning of June of 2015. And actually, she had a huge, huge year. I mean, she was doing awesome. She was at the peak of her career, second again behind Simone Biles. But Maggie did phenomenal. I mean, she's amazing and she's beautiful and she's consistent and she's winning.
A Minnesota gymnast who just won gold with Team USA returned home to a warm welcome by fellow gymnasts from Twin Cities Twisters.
Her mom,
she did awesome.
Her coach and her dad were in Scotland cheering her on.
As of right now, I would say that unless something happens, both Maggie Nichols and Gabby Douglas, they are on the path to 2016.
At another competition, Maggie finishes a bar routine.
And that was excellent.
She's one of those athletes that really does keep improving each time she competes.
Maggie appears in an NBC Olympics promo for the 2016 Rio Olympics.
Maggie Nichols is from Little Canada. The graduate of Roseville High School is practically a shoe-in to be picked for Team USA next month at the Olympic trials.
Such an honor that, you know, all my hard work throughout my whole career is paying off, and I'll just be so honored to represent the U.S. and Minnesota, and I just want to do my best and help Team USA.
April 2016, 4 months before Olympics.
NBC Sports presents the 2016 Secret U.S. Classic.
Well, Al, Maggie Nichols is not here. She is back home in Minnesota working her way through a knee injury. This is an athlete who had an amazing breakout 2015. And then Maggie tore her meniscus, had to have surgery. But remember, the last time Maggie Nichols was injured, she came back stronger physically and mentally. She was a completely different athlete. We don't know what's going to happen, but Al, they don't call her Swaggy Maggie for nothing.
A photo shows the girls stretching. John Nichols.
May had a kind of a rough couple months going into the Olympic trials. She had hurt her knee at the ranch. She had a tough road ahead of her, you know, to try to make the Olympic team.
Gina Nichols.
So we've got Maggie trying to rehab a knee injury and a surgery. Well, in the meantime, during the spring of 2016, Steve Penny controlled every single thing that we did before we went to the Olympic trials. One thing was that Hershey's want to make a commercial in honor of Simone. And the only people who are going to be in the commercial is going to be Simone's family and a best friend or two. So she invites Maggie to be in this commercial for her. So they get down there and they started filming in Simone's house. And then all of a sudden, the film crew for Hershey's gets a phone call from Steve Penny saying that Maggie is not going to be in that commercial. And he was screaming and yelling, "I'm supposed to be in charge of this. I'm in charge."
And you still haven't heard anything from the FBI?
Not one thing. I was told that they knew. I was told that the police were all over it. But as Steve Penny told us, we could not talk about it.
We really weren't going to go public or say anything because we were told that there's an FBI investigation and we could possibly jeopardize it. And also, you know, we didn't want to upset, you know, Steve Penny and Marta Caroli. They knew that Maggie reported Larry Nassar. We had to do exactly what they wanted us to do. You know, they were the ones that actually picked our Olympic team. They had us under the gun. They had the Olympics hanging over our heads.
NBC Sports welcomes you to the 2016 U.S. Olympic Trials. And this is a big stage for 13 hopeful women. As we often say, the selection committee is watching everything, but the two most important eyes in the building are those. Marta Caroli, who's the boss of Team USA. But tonight, everybody's watching. We'll start things off with Maggie Nichols on the vault. She's trying to get to the Olympic Games after two really bad knee injuries.
Marta said for Maggie to be in the hunt, she has to be as good as she was in 2015. Because she was capable of doing this very difficult vault. We'll see it from Simone Biles. It's called an Ammonine. It's a 2.5 twist.
Maggie does a handspring off the springboard, twists in midair, and lands.
Just a double fall. Great landing.
She's going to get a very low score, but once again, it doesn't have the same maximum level score that the Aminar will have.
At the judges' table, Marta shakes her head. Maggie walks through the arena and waves to the crowd.
And so you watch, and you watch her do her best, and you watch her compete, and she did well.
TV cameras show the other gymnasts' parents in the stands.
For us, you know, as parents, every meet that we had gone to up until this point, we had our seats marked. You know, we had camera crews following us. You know, even at the America's Cup a couple weeks prior, we had a camera crew following us throughout the whole arena. But we showed up at Olympic trials, and our seats aren't marked. We don't have mics. There's no camera crew following us. And so something was definitely off.
The standings show Maggie in sixth place.
So here are the final standings. Lori Hernandez was the second best, then Allie Raceman by a significant amount, and then Michaela Skinner, Reagan Smith, and then Gabby Douglas finished exactly the way she started the night in seventh place. Okay, they took more than 18 minutes. President Steve Penny is going to step to the microphone.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the president and CEO of USA Gymnastics, Steve Penny.
Good evening. It's now my great pleasure to introduce to you the five ladies who will represent the United States of America in Rio de Janeiro. Three-time world champion, Simone Biles. The reigning Olympic all-around champion, Gabrielle Douglas.
Gabby Douglas joins Simone.
Making her first Olympic team, Lori Hernandez. The reigning world champion on bars, Madison Koshin. And the second member of the Fierce Five, 2012 Olympic gold medalist, Allie Raceman.
Allie waves as she joins her teammates on the floor. They embrace in a group hug.
They will be joined by the three replacement athletes.
I got sixth in the all-around, and then five girls were chosen, and then they chose three alternates.
Michaela Skinner, Reagan Smith, and Ashton.
I mean, I've tried my whole life to make that Olympic team, and then not making it, even as an alternate. I think I was mentally and physically just ready to move on.
Confetti and streamers rain down on the eight gymnasts chosen for the Olympic team. The girls give each other hugs, each holding a bouquet of flowers.
Maggie was crushed. She had, you know, many things taken away.
The girls pose for a group picture.
And how do you accept it? You know, I'm trying to justify and explain, rationalize things to myself. But it's hard to come up and saying things that, you know, you really can't prove.
A candid photo shows the smiling girls.
And so the girls that get selected jump up and down and get flowers and flashes and photos. And Maggie stands down and congratulated every single one of them.
The selected team gathers with their hands in the center of their circle.
After being abused by USAG, by Steve Penny, by Larry Nassar, all I wanted to do is get my child out of there and take her home and hug her and love her.
At the Nichols home, Maggie's bedroom door stands ajar at the top of some stairs. Inside, against purple walls, dozens of trophies, plaques, and medals sit displayed on shelves.
I try not to think too much about it. I just try to, you know, carry on and hope that they made the right decision for the right reasons.
Fade to black. Now, a small suburban home rests behind a low stone wall. August 2016, Indie Star interview with Rachel Denhollander.
What are your intentions then going forward?
I will be filing a police report with the hope that the DA picks it up and presses charges for first-degree sexual assault.
How hard was it to get to that point?
I know that means that if the DA picks it up, I'll be testifying with great detail in open court in front of him, knowing that we both have the same memories. And I hate that idea. I hate it. But if I don't, he can continue. And I hate that idea more.
At the Indy Star, Mark Alessia looks over copies of medical documents.
By the time I interviewed Rachel, she had about 100 pages of medical documents. She had basically prepared a case against NASA herself as a lawyer, really.
Detective Lieutenant Andrea Munford, Michigan State University Police.
On August 25th of 2016, our dispatch called and said, "You investigate sex crimes, right?" I said, "Yes." And they said, "Well, we have a woman that called. She lives out of state, and she was sexually assaulted by a doctor 16 years prior, and she would like to speak to someone about it." And I called her that day, and it was Rachel Denhollander. And she said, "Well, I'd like to meet you in person. I want to bring you some documents and things." I had asked her, "What's the doctor's name?" And she said, "Larry Nassar." I had heard of him from a 2014 investigation where another survivor had reported that he had sexually assaulted her during medical treatment. But the case was presented to the prosecutor's office, and they declined to charge it at that time.
What I found out when I came forward was that multiple women and young girls had spoken up years before I walked in his door, as early as 1997. All of the women were assured it was common medical procedure, that it was not sexual abuse, and they were sent back to him for continued abuse.
August 30th, 2016, in an interrogation room.
Oh, sorry. I'm Andrew Munford.
Hi, nice to meet you. There you go, sir.
Subtitles. Thanks for coming in so quick, too. Obviously, you're not under arrest, and you can leave whenever you want.
The day after I talked to Rachel, he came in, and he was very friendly, congenial, quirky. A lot of people call him quirky.
Now, how long have you been doing this technique?
I have video from 30 pounds ago. it would have been in the 1990s. You know what I mean? Like early.
And I started asking him about the 2014 investigation. There were certain protocols that were put in place about getting informed consent, having another medical person in the room, wearing gloves.
You know, have you had any instances where there hasn't been anyone in the room for an exam?
There'd be some on occasion, of course. Okay. You know what I mean? That just is the way that with medicine is now, it's difficult.
Would this ever involve, like, digital anal penetration?
Only if we're doing a coccyx, you know, problem. I mean, then if I actually have to fix a coccyx, then I'm going to be using my finger inside and my thumb on the outside.
Okay.
You know, to,
do you wear gloves when you do this?
If I'm going to go intra, yes. You know what I mean?
Well, the reason I'm asking is that we did have another complaint.
Really?
Yeah. And it's a patient from a while ago.
Okay.
And she does describe some things that sound to me like they're out of the norm from your typical treatment.
Okay.
And the more I continued asking him about these specifics, he got very nervous. He was sweating. He was stuttering. And then he would try to reframe it to blame Rachel or any other patient.
What's confusing me about is, why wasn't there anything said back when I was treating them if they felt that uncomfortable? You know what I mean? It's like if I'm talking to the patient.
Okay, put yourself being a teenage girl.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Most people that are sexually assaulted are very uncomfortable. They don't know what to say.
Okay.
He would talk about medical terminology, referencing certain parts of the body. And then he would say, "Oh, you don't need to know all that, or you won't understand all that."
You know, the sacral tuberous ligament, it runs from the pubic symphysis, the falciform process. It runs, it's like the pelvic floor, okay? Mm-hmm. You won't understand that stuff. So you're really coming in.
And I didn't understand all that, but it didn't matter because he still couldn't explain to me how any of those parts or injuries to them would require vaginal penetration to fix.
Do you ever get aroused during these exams?
Do I get aroused during the exam?
Yeah, but do you ever get an erection?
Obviously you don't, you know what I mean? So
is there a reason that you would during an exam?
I shouldn't be getting an erection during an exam.
Right.
if there was arousal, it's I mean, like, it would be because of whatever. I don't know, but I'm not trying to.
Well, you know, I mean, whatever. I don't know.
Well,
I don't
know. When you're a guy, sometimes you get an erection. You know what I mean? But I don't. It's.
That's you get an erection when you're aroused. And so, like last time, there will be an investigation.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, I'm going to go grab a card just so that you can have my information. I'll be right back.
Okay.
As Andrea leaves the room, Larry rubs his forehead. Steve Berta, investigations editor.
As we started looking into the Nassar case, we talked to Nassar's lawyer. First thing he said was, you know, this is a very important man, and you're potentially going to ruin his reputation here. And so we were very aware of that ourselves. Rachel Den Hollander was just a completely credible source. And John Manley and Jamie Dancher were preparing a lawsuit at that time. That gave us more confidence.
Tim Evans.
We backgrounded, we couldn't find any lawsuits, we couldn't find any malpractice allegations. One of my jobs was to find out if there was an acceptable procedure where you would use an intravaginal penetration to treat a young athlete, and quickly found out that there was not. My job was to contact Nassar for an interview at the attorney's office.
Tim drives down a highway, interview recording.
He was a volunteer, is that his status with USA Gymnastics?
Nassar's attorney. Dr. Nassar was a volunteer for how many years? Larry Nassar, 29.
29 years with USA Gymnastics. He wasn't paid a salary. He resigned, actually retired, in 2015 because he went on to other matters that had nothing to do with allegations of sexual misconduct.
What else would you like to say about the allegations against him?
He denies all the allegations. He's never heard these allegations before. No one from law enforcement, any other regulatory body, USA Gymnastics, any individuals, parents, no one has ever suggested that Dr. Nassar has done anything in any context with either this gymnast or any other that he's aware of.
And it looks like there's an allegation that he manually penetrated the gymnast here, or her vagina. Is that a procedure that he uses?
No. There's no circumstance that he was ever penetrated her vagina in any way related to any procedure.
Okay.
Tim travels down a road flanked by a grassy field.
You know, when I left him there, Nassar was nearly in tears, pleading with me, please don't write a story about this. Don't do this. You're going to ruin my reputation. This is going to harm my family. I haven't done anything wrong. And, you know, leaving, I'm a human being, you know, that affected me. And I was confident in the information we had, and I was confident in our story. But I also, you know, see this man who's had no spot on his record as far as we knew at that time prior, begging us not to do that. So, you know, I had to kind of keep reminding myself. It was like, don't feel sorry for him. You know, feel sorry for the victims, the survivors. But he made a good play.
Newspapers speed through a printing press.
Former team doctor for USA Gymnastics for 20 years is facing dozens of accusations of sexual abuse, including one from a former Olympian.
A team of reporters from the Indianapolis Star published accounts from gymnasts who accused Nassar of sexually abusing them during supposed medical procedures.
In that interview with Nassar's lawyer, he said that he had never performed an intravaginal procedure, which was really his downfall, because at that point, every woman who he'd done this to, and there were hundreds, knew he was lying. And the reaction was almost immediate.
All these women out there were thinking, what? That's not what I experienced. So we started getting phone calls from victim survivors.
12 more victims had come forward, then it was 30, then it was 60. And it was going up every day.
There were more and more and more.
And as it grew, we started to realize how bad it really was out there.
But at the time, we also got nasty phone calls, nasty letters from Larry Nassar's supporters. I mean, you have to understand, this is a beloved man.
Jamie Dancher.
Yeah, I went in as a Jane Doe. But for sure in the gymnastics community, everyone knew it was me. And that's kind of when the shit really started hitting the fan for me, because people were so mean.
Comments on social media read, "This is a witch hunt," and "Is it rape if you like it?"
She wasn't lauded as, oh, you know, she's heroic. Good job, Jamie. Me too. What she got was, "You're a whore. You're a drunk." Lawyers for U.S. State Gymnastics calling her ex-boyfriends, trying to dig up dirt on her sexual history. They let her get the living shit kicked out of her. On social media, in the press, her and Rachel Den Hollander.
It was an incredibly dark time period. There were a lot of things said, that I was a bitter, washed-up gymnast who couldn't hack it, that I wanted fame, that I enjoyed it. I was too physically ill to eat most of the time, so I lost a lot of weight. I lost every shred of privacy, and I felt like every shred of dignity with what I had to disclose.
Larry wears a Vote for Larry Nassar t-shirt.
He was running for school board at the time of our first story on him. He got 22% of the votes, more than 2,000. After all that.
On social media, Larry stands in front of an Olympic rings display. His post reads in part, "I decided to retire in part to prepare the HPS School Board of Education election." At her home, Gina Nichols stares at a laptop screen. She reads an article about Larry's retirement.
I read in the Indy Star, Larry Nassar was allowed to retire from USA Gymnastics because he wanted to focus on running for school board and his hometown practice. And I thought to myself, what is going on here? I mean, I was so dumbfounded. I'm like, why are they allowing him to go and run for school board when he's been molesting my daughter and others at the ranch? By that time, we reported Maggie's child sexual abuse over a year ago, and we've been continuously told by Steve Penny, we cannot talk about this because it'll ruin their investigation of Larry Nassar. But nobody was helping me. I wasn't getting any guidance. I'd had enough. So then on the Indy Star, I saw John Manley's name, and he said he had been working with victims, and I immediately contacted him.
In a large conference room, John Manley and a woman with dark hair leaf through depositions.
Within a week of the Indy Star story being published, Gina Nichols emailed me. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know who Maggie was, but she told me the story and told me that her daughter had reported in June of 2015. And then I knew exactly who I was dealing with. I was dealing with an organization that didn't give a rat's ass about children, that cared only about itself, and that was covering up rape.
A timeline appears.
So when Jamie, Rachel, and Jessica reported Nassar's abuse to the Indy Star in 2016, that was the first time it was reported to the public. This wasn't the first time USAG heard about Nassar's abuse. They knew in June of 2015 when Maggie Nichols tells her coach that Larry Nassar's touching me funny, who then should have reported to the police, but she didn't. She reports it to Ron DeFane, who should have reported the police, but she didn't, who then reports it to Steve Penny, who should have reported the police, but he didn't. And their lawyers had them hire somebody who investigates sexual harassment cases at workplaces. And she interviewed Maggie Nichols, and then she interviewed Olympians Allie Raisman and Michaela Maroney.
At the Olympics, Michaela vaults.
Allie Raisman reported that Dr. Nassar sexually abused Michaela in their residence at the Olympic Village in London in 2012. It was 5 weeks between the time Maggie reported to USAG and when Mr. Penny finally told the FBI. That's a direct violation of Indiana and Texas law. But then, for some reason, the FBI took no action. Nothing happened in October, in November, in December, in January, February, March, April, May. All this time Nassar is working at Michigan State. He's molesting girls that entire time, 13 months.
In the IndyStar newsroom, Marissa Kwiatkowski types at her computer and Tim Evans writes notes. Steve Berta.
When the Nassar story came out, we were trying to get on to the bigger story of what's wrong at USA Gymnastics. We wanted to establish that it went far beyond Nassar. We knew it did because of what we were finding out about the culture.
Marissa joins the others in a conference room.
Okay, so there are some issues with the tunneling.
I figured. Yeah. Both the laws in Texas and Indiana require someone to report immediately. Mm-hmm. And there's somehow that there's questions about whether USA Gymnastics did that.
Right.
That what I'm hoping you guys can do is sort of go in there and actually just write it like that to say there's evidence that they were trying to keep things quiet from the start. And then start showing that evidence.
Marissa Kwiatkowski, investigative reporter, the Indianapolis Star.
USA Gymnastics has said that they did take action. They felt that they took action by launching this internal investigation, hiring somebody to look into these allegations, and doing so, interviewing people over a five-week period before they reported to the FBI.
What do you think?
I think that the law as it relates to mandatory reporting is pretty clear that you should err on the side of the child and report allegations to authorities immediately. That's what the law says.
Tim Evans looks through a stack of papers.
As we looked deeper into the Maggie Nichols story, we got a large dump of documents from one of our colleagues in Lansing, Michigan. And there were hundreds of pages, including a half dozen or so emails. This is a July 22, 2015 email. So this was after Maggie had reported to USA Gymnastics. Records that we reviewed showed that one email was sent to USA Gymnastics' attorney. Nassar had shared links to some graphic videos of him performing what he deemed were medical procedures to defend himself from allegations of abuse.
Once you find a tender point, you can stay on it.
I think anybody that saw that and it was a reasonable person and cared about kids would have taken some action immediately. And there were other emails between Nassar and a couple of USA Gymnastics officials. Pretty soon, we're fishing those out and we're laying them out and looking at this timeline we've created of, you know, these lies they were telling to cover for him. And it says, as we explained on the call, USA Gymnastics has been made aware of concerns regarding some of your therapy techniques and that athletes are uncomfortable with certain areas of their body that are being treated.
In addition, we suggest that prior to the championships that Ron Gallimore will once again advise the medical staff, the athlete care coordinator, that you cannot attend for personal reasons unless you prefer a different approach that we are prepared to discuss.
With Steve Berta.
All right, thank you. Bye. So tell me what's the headline? What's the lead?
USA Gymnastics, in negotiating basically with Larry, agreed to lie to people and say that he was sick and that's why he couldn't go to a particular competition.
Mm-hmm.
So that shows a cover-up.
It's a pretty good story. How many were copied on the email?
Three. It was Larry, Rybacki, and Caroli.
Steve lifts his eyebrows and shakes his head.
Since the initial allegations became public this month, the Michigan State University police have received 24 complaints of sexual abuse against Nassar. As the complaints came in this month, Nassar was fired from MSU, but he has not been charged with a crime.
The two biggest fears I had coming forward was the investigator that I would get and the prosecutor, because both of them are capable of completely derailing the process if they don't take it seriously, if they don't investigate it well, and if they choose not to file charges.
Angela Povilaitis, Assistant Attorney General, State of Michigan.
John Manley filed the civil lawsuits against Michigan State and USAG, USOC, and he represented those victims in their civil litigation. I played the role of the lead prosecutor in the criminal case of, you know, the people of the state of Michigan versus Larry Nassar, and worked with and represented those victims in court as the prosecutor.
Andrea and Angela worked very closely together And Angela looked at the files and she said, I will take them all and I will fight for every one of them. And she did.
Andrea Munford drives through a suburban neighborhood.
This is a neighborhood in Holt, Michigan. It's not far from MSU's campus where he lived. And we had gotten information from some victims that reported he was doing medical treatments in the basement of his home. And during that time, he was sexually abusing them. There was also another victim who was not a medical patient that he had sexually abused in the basement. And based on that information, we were able to get search warrants for his house. We executed the search warrant on September 20th, 2016. One of our crime scene investigators came in midday and said, the trash hasn't been picked up yet. It's still out by the curb and all the trash is still in it. So we did what's called a trash pull. Inside the trash, there were several hard drives with his name and phone number written on them in Sharpie. That's where the first images of child sexually abusive material, commonly referred to as child porn, were found.
At the Michigan State University Police Department.
37,000 images.
An officer directs a handcuffed Larry Nassar into a room.
Michigan State University and Team USA gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar has been arrested. Nassar will be charged with 3 counts of first-degree criminal sexual conduct with someone younger than 13. Attorney General Bill Schuette.
We were looking toward trial and preparing for that. And we really looked at what could get the highest sentence for him. In Michigan, we have a statute that if you have a victim under 13 and she's penetrated, it's a 25-year mandatory minimum. And then we identified those cases that we thought were strongest and brought those in February 2017. Those victims knew to report because of Rachel's disclosure. She, you know, at that point was the only public face.
In court, Rachel takes the witness stand.
When a victim comes to report a sexual assault, it's a scary thing because they're giving up so much control by telling someone what happened to them. But each of the survivors were very determined to make it very clear to everybody what really went on.
On November 22nd, 2017, Larry enters court in orange prison clothing.
What ended up happening is he made a plea deal where he agreed to plead guilty to the possession of the child pornography, to willfully destroying evidence and a couple other charges in exchange for the dismissal of traveling with intent to commit a sexual assault overseas, which is a violation of federal law.
Outside, a sign reads, "We support the gymnasts. Shame on Nassar, MSU, and USA Gymnastics."
Good morning, Your Honor. Angela Kovalaitis. On behalf of the people and I'm with the Michigan Department of Attorney General, I will let the other attorneys...
We were able to lay out the terms of the sentencing range. But we also wanted victim buy-in. Like, we wanted them, all 125, if possible, to be okay with this plea. So essential to any plea agreement was that he had to agree to allow all of the victims, if they chose, to give an impact statement.
January 2018.
So that was something, quite frankly, I am really proud about.
If I may, our first survivor to speak today, Your Honor, is a former national team member, and I'm very happy that she's here. Her name is Jamie Dancher.
Thank you. What would you like us to know?
Larry listens intently.
Larry, you saw all the physical, mental, and emotional abuse from our coaches and USAG national staff. You pretended to be on my side, calling all of them the monsters. But instead of protecting children and reporting the abuse you saw, you used your position of power to manipulate and abuse as well. You knew I was powerless.
Jamie looks down and takes a deep breath.
I'm here today with all these other women, not victims, but survivors, to tell you face to face that your days of manipulation are over. We have a voice now. We have the power now.
Larry shuts his eyes.
As an Olympic gymnast, being able to say you have no power over me anymore, I can finally say I am proud to be an Olympian. It's been so hard to be proud of anything. So to even say that for me is like, okay, I think I'm getting a little better. I feel proud of something.
Judge, the first victim will be publicly identified, and her name is Ms. Kyle Stevens. She has asked for two support persons. I will be standing in support of her. As
next survivor you will hear from is Amanda Thomashow. She has authorized to be publicly identified.
Mm-hmm. You know, the next survivor you will hear from is Larissa Boyce. She is going to be publicly identified.
I told Michigan State University back in 1997. Instead of being protected, I was humiliated, I was in trouble, and brainwashed into believing that I was the problem.
Every time Angela stood up and said, "Survivor XYZ is coming forward and she has decided to speak publicly," that was just an incredibly powerful statement every single time, because it meant that they felt safe enough, and it meant that they were able to put the shame not on themselves, but on their abuser.
Olympic gold medalist Simone Biles is going public today, saying she was among the athletes who were sexually abused by Larry Nassar.
Several Olympic champions have also come forward, including Allie Raisman, Michaela Maroney, and Gabby Douglas. Maggie Nichols first came forward more than 2 years ago, but her identity has not been publicly known until now.
In Oklahoma, Maggie vaults. In court, her mother stands at the microphone.
Maggie did not want to be here today. She is a full-time student, and she's training as a full-time athlete still for the University of Oklahoma. So this is, it's too painful. So I'm going to read the statement from that she put out to the public. USA Gymnastics and the United States Olympic Committee did not provide a safe environment for me and my teammates and friends to train. We were subjected to Dr. Larry Nassar at every national team training camp, which occurred monthly at the Crowley Ranch. Up until now, I was identified as Athlete A by USA Gymnastics, the United States Olympic Committee, and Michigan State University. And I want everyone to know that he did not do this to Athlete A, he did it to Maggie Nichols.
As the judge smiles warmly, Allie Raisman steps forward. More young women give their statements. As one finishes and returns to her seat, a woman hugs her.
Watching them...
Andrea Munford.
...support each other, and just that momentum of empowerment was incredible.
Angela tears up.
I'm not going to look at her. She's going to make me cry.
Andrea holds back tears.
I am so honored to let you know that the next person you will hear from is Rachel Denholm.
January 24th, 2018, final day of impact statements.
There are two major purposes in our criminal justice system, Your Honor, the pursuit of justice and the protection of the innocent. Neither of these purposes can be met if anything less than the maximum available sentence under the plea agreement is imposed upon Larry for his crimes. So I ask, how much priority should be placed on communicating that the fullest weight of the law will be used to protect another innocent child from the soul-shattering devastation that sexual assault brings? I submit to you that these children are worth everything, worth every protection the law can offer, worth the maximum sentence.
Thank you.
Larry hangs his head, eyes closed. Rachel shoots a glare in his direction as she turns back toward the gallery. Angela hugs her. Rachel hugs several people as she makes her way back to her seat.
It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen as a lawyer. It's the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life.
John Manley.
He received two 60-year sentences and, the tongue lashing of the century. You know, what people don't realize is that for almost every one of these girls, this is their first sexual experience. And when you take the ability to love and express love from somebody and take it away or damage it, it profoundly affects their psyche. And at the end of the day, that's really what he did. He stole that part of them, and they're all struggling to get it back. And most of them should never have met Larry Nassar had people in charge of him just done the right thing. And the piece that's missing is the accountability for those who knew better and the adults who were supposed to protect these athletes and these women and these girls. And we don't have that yet.
In Washington, D.C., the U.S. Capitol building stands at the end of a busy avenue.
Clearly, USA Gymnastics was not anxious to have this in public. They succeeded for a year in keeping an absolute lid on it. And what I found out is Michaela Maroney was forced to sign a non-disclosure agreement. And I believe they required other athletes who were victims of Dr. Nassar to sign NDAs. This was a full court press by USA Gymnastics to keep this quiet and to minimize the damage.
Hearing on Olympic athlete abuse.
We began this process in January following the disgusting revelations that former USA Gymnastic team doctor Larry Nassar sexually abused hundreds of athletes over the span of two decades, even well after numerous survivors alerted authorities about his actions. As we now know, many of our American Olympians who stood tall in representing our nation in the international stage were suffering behind the scenes.
Time-lapse photography shows cars passing the Indy Star building.
We're right in the middle of finishing up a story that's based on emails that were going back and forth between USA Gymnastics and Larry Nassar, in which they basically...
After all those women gave their testimony in that courtroom at his sentencing, we kept our nose to the grindstone. I mean, we were just, like, going full bore. Nassar wasn't our target. Our target was USA Gymnastics.
USAG struggles to restructure and reinvent itself amid allegations it turned a blind eye and even covered up rampant sexual abuse by former team doctor Larry Nassar.
I'll begin with the questions, and I'm going to begin with you, Mr. Penny. Former gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar was convicted of criminal sexual conduct with gymnasts, including members of the USA national team. My understanding is that you were first informed about this abuse on June 17, 2015. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, with respect to you and your question and the committee, I have been instructed by my attorney to assert my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution. For that reason, I must respectfully decline to answer your question.
Many of Nassar's victims, including Maggie, sit in the audience in Indianapolis.
As we started doing more reporting on Steve Penny's handling of the allegations against Larry Nassar, we started looking more closely at his relationships with law enforcement.
Marissa types out a sentence.
At the same time FBI was investigating Nassar, Penny was talking to him about a job. This is not the only instance in which the relationship between USA Gymnastics and law enforcement agencies in Indianapolis was called into question.
Yeah.
Okay.
Penny sought to cultivate a close relationship with federal investigators to protect the image of USA Gymnastics, going so far as to offer a job to one of the FBI agents.
At the Senate hearing.
Mr. Penny, I respect your right to invoke your Fifth Amendment privilege. You have that right, but you also have a responsibility. You were part of an organization that in effect prioritized medals and money over the young women and girls who were sexually abused by Mr. Nassar. Don't you feel you have a responsibility to the athletes who are here today and to others around the country to be more forthcoming?
Respectfully, Senator, I would like to answer your question. However, I've been instructed by my attorney to assert my rights under the Fifth Amendment to the Constitution.
Mr. Penny, may I assume that it is your intent to invoke that privilege in further questioning?
Yes.
Let the record reflect that you have availed yourself of the privileges afforded under the Fifth Amendment to the United States Constitution not to give testimony that might incriminate you. Mr. Penny, you're excused.
Penny folds up a piece of paper, stands, and walks from the table.
Shame.
Tim Evans records Penny as he leaves.
What would you like to say to the women that were abused while you were silent?
Penny keeps walking, his gaze averted from the reporter.
Anything to say to the survivors?
He leaves the building. 5 months later, nighttime at the Indy Star, Steve Berta talks with a gray-haired man.
Okay, go ahead and write that up. I'm going to ask Curly about this photo that we've got.
Of what?
It's of him being arrested.
We got a photo of him?
Yeah. See, there's a picture. I'm worried that New York Times is coming out with it.
Could we go tonight? I mean, do we have enough?
The story appears on the front page.
A major new arrest in the USA gymnastics scandal tonight. The organization's former president was arrested at a cabin in Tennessee overnight, more than a year after he resigned.
The U.S. Marshals Service arresting a former leader of USA Gymnastics after hunting him down at a cabin in Tennessee. Authorities accusing him of tampering with evidence in the case against disgraced former gymnastics doctor Larry Nassar.
Above the Indy Star building, the lights from the sprawling cityscape glow in the night sky. Inside an arena, Maggie takes a deep breath as she starts her uneven bars routine. 2017 NCAA Gymnastics Championships.
So far, so good for Maggie Nichols.
Maggie was second in the world in the all-around in 2015. And yet mysteriously left off the 2016 Olympic team, did not even earn an alternate spot. So she has all the capabilities of every one of those young ladies who came home from Rio with an Olympic gold medal.
Maggie hugs her teammates.
After the 2016 Olympic trials, I decided to retire from elite gymnastics and move on to the NCAA gymnastics, where I had the opportunity to compete for the University of Oklahoma. In 2017, I was the last person to go, and so I did probably the best vault that I did the whole season.
Maggie's dad gives a thumbs up and smiles proudly in the stands as Maggie races down the runway and performs a flawless vault.
I've never experienced anything like that before, and that's probably one of the best moments of my life.
Maggie hurries over to her cheering teammates. They pat her back and give her hugs.
I think that it was a huge awakening for her because all of a sudden she gets there, they're nice to her, gymnastics is fun, the coaches are super good, oh, the healthcare providers are really, really good. It's not like it was when she was on the elite team.
Maggie's parents cheer enthusiastically in the stands. Maggie high-fives her teammates.
Maggie took all the negatives and named them into a positive and went to Oklahoma and gave it her all. She beat them all on every event, at every meet, for the entire year.
Maggie and her teammates surround a large trophy. They grin at the camera, raising their index fingers, showing number one.
And then they brought the trophy over, so I think that's kind of the moment that was just indescribable. It was amazing.
In a home video, little Maggie sprints down the runway and vaults onto the large, soft mat.
Elite gymnastics just kind of beat me down, but I've grown as a person and as a woman. I found the love for the sport again.
Words appear. In 2018, Maggie Nichols became the NCAA National All-Around Champion. In 2019, she successfully defended her title. In January 2018, the Carollis announced the permanent closure of the ranch. A videotaped deposition of Marta Caroli.
Were you ever advised by any USAG official in or around June of 2015 that they had received a complaint that Dr. Nassar had molested a national team gymnast at the ranch?
Yes, I did.
And who reported that to you, ma'am?
Mr. Penny.
At a press conference.
Mrs. Caroli knew in June of 2015 that Larry Nassar had abused little girls. The law in Texas required her to immediately call the police or call Child Protective Services and report. And she didn't. Nor did Rhonda Fain, the head of the women's program, nor did Mr. Penny. That deserves an investigation. Other questions?
Maggie Nichols reported Nassar to USA Gymnastics in June of 2015. In the 15 months that elapsed before the Indianapolis Star's first article on Nassar, he continued to see patients and abused dozens of girls. Over 500 survivors of Nassar have now come forward, including 9 Olympians.
USA Gymnastics once wrote to a gymnast saying that if she continued to complain about her coach, she would be off the team, regardless of her performance. And that system is still in place today.
Right.
They are clinging to a process that has been used in the past to silence dissent. That's what that says.
The U.S. Department of Justice is currently investigating USA Gymnastics, the U.S. Olympic Committee, and the FBI for their handling of allegations of sexual abuse of athletes. Learn more and take action at LeadAFilm.com. This film has been described by Pixelogic Media, voiced by Tansy Alexander. Credits appear, directed by Bonnie Cohen and John Schenck. Produced by Saren Marshall, PGA. Producers Julie Parker Bonello, Jennifer Say. Director of Photography, John Schenck. Edited by Don Bernier. Music by Jeff Beal. Executive Producer, Richard Burge. Executive Producer, Regina K. Scully. Executive Producers, Barbara and Eric Dobkin, Patty Quillen, Ann W. Lovell, Jennifer Westfall, and Joe Plummer. Executive Producers, Debbie McLeod and J.K. Sears, Ken and Christina Nolan, Jim and Susan Swartz. Executive Producers, Dan Kogan, Geraldine White-Dreyfus, Jenny Raskin. Co-Executive Producers, Katie Drake Bettner, Nancy Blockman, Ian Darling, John H. N. Fisher and Jennifer Caldwell, Neon McEvoy, and Leslie Berriman. Credits roll. Trademark and copyright 2020, After Image Public Media, all rights reserved. Ownership of this motion picture is protected by copyright and other applicable laws of the United States of America and other countries. Any unauthorized duplication, distribution, or exhibition of this motion picture, including soundtrack, is prohibited and could result in criminal prosecution as well as civil liability. After Image Public Media is the author of this motion picture for the purpose of copyright and other laws. Mark Alessia, Steve Berta, Tim Evans, and Marissa Kwiatkowski broke the historic story of the Larry Nassar sexual abuse scandal on September 12, 2016 in the Indianapolis Star. The filmmakers wish to thank the journalists, the Indianapolis Star, and the USA Today Network for their cooperation in this production. Actual Films. Impact Partners.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.